It was a much smaller contingency on stage Tuesday night in Iowa for the seventh Democratic debate of the 2020 election cycle. Just six candidates qualified, and while Trump and impeachment is a hot topic, another question loomed on many people's minds. Did Bernie Sanders tell Elizabeth Warren in 2018 that a woman could not be elected president? What else did we learn from the candidates who sparred before cameras in Des Moines, Iowa? On the WDL Newsline is CBS News political consultant Leonard Steinhorn, whose own observations are always the next best thing if you weren't able to catch the debate itself. Good morning to you, Leonard.
Hey, that's a great lead-in. Thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you. Regarding Senators Sanders and Warren, the question of whether a woman can become president was actually upstaged by a better one. 10 men adequately recall dates.
Person on this stage who has beaten an incumbent Republican any time in the past 30 years is me.
I defeated an incumbent Republican running for Congress.
When?
1990. That's how I won. Beat a Republican congressman.
Wasn't that 30 years ago?
I beat an incumbent Republican congressman.
And I said, I was the only one who's beaten an incumbent Republican in 30 years.
Well, 30 years ago, it's 1990, as a matter of fact.
What did you make of that exchange?
Well, actually, I was wondering why Bernie Sanders had to take the bait on that one. You know, why can't he let that go? And then why did Elizabeth Warren go back at him? I mean, it just seemed to drag the entire debate down to trivia and back and forth and small-mindedness. However, I do think when Elizabeth Warren stood up there and said, all of these men, they've lost 10 times in elections. The only two people who have never lost to a Republican are the two women on stage. That was an effective moment. And yeah, that's when she will be remembered for. So I think she pulled that off well. I just don't know why Bernie Sanders couldn't let it go and say, you know what? We are all in this thing together. I support every woman candidate, you know, at every level except here tonight. And if I don't win, I will support the woman.
Right.
Bottom line is he could have gotten away with not getting dragged down into that, but he felt like he had to sort of take the bait. And I'm not so sure why. That made him seem small. And it also made her seem a little small, too.
Interesting. Joe Biden seems to be running on a pitch of being the most electable of the remaining candidates. And yet it seems fair to note that he's by far the weakest debater of the bunch. Is that a problem for him?
Well, look, he made a good close. So let's give him credit for that. And that's the Joe Biden that a lot of people remember, sort of feisty, passionate, willing to dig deep into his soul and talk about the American experience, the American spirit, the American people. That was good, but the rest of it was sort of uninspired and unsteady, and it didn't seem like you can imagine him standing next to the entertainer-in-chief, President Trump, you know, having an effective debate. So he's going to have to learn how to bring his game on all of this. He's going to have to learn how to find that inner Joe Biden that people have known about for years. He's just not bringing it to these debates. He's not necessarily doing terribly, mm-hmm. but when you're unsteady, unsteadiness communicates a lack of leadership. And when the American people are looking for somebody to lead them, they want to have a steady, confident, compelling performance. He did not show that last night.
What did you think of the moderators, what I saw as strict observance of timekeeping? Was that an intrusion to the candidate's opportunity to give thoughtful answers?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, because this is one of my first reactions to this debate. They were robotic. They were scripted. They weren't even listening to the answers. A good moderator is going to listen to the answer, know the issues well enough, and have a really interesting follow-up to be able to sort of get more information, get more knowledge, or catch somebody in sort of a contradiction or whatever it may be.
Right.
But it seemed as if they were just following a script. So I think they actually diminished the debate, and you've got to let somebody finish a sentence. You've got to find a way to be able to step in or at least let them finish and say, okay, you've had your time, thank you, but not just interrupt them straight off, because ultimately that sort of took away from the energy of these candidates as they're trying to talk over moderators. I think among the biggest losers of last night were the moderators.
Very interesting. How about Mayor Pete or Senator Klobuchar, and perhaps even Tom Steyer? They seem to need to inject themselves somehow in terms of being a more viable candidate. Did any of those three have especially memorable moments that you think might have helped their cause?
I don't think any of them had great debates. Steyer is not necessarily a credible candidate at this point, though he has tons of money and he seems to be rising in the polls, but I don't see him ultimately having much of a chance at the nomination. So he had some good moments. He showed some good passion. But, you know, when you say that you're qualified to be president of the United States on the world stage by the fact that you've been a business person, you've met a lot of world leaders, I'm not so sure that's the most compelling answer to be able to give me a lot of information about the judgment you would bring to the job. Mayor Pete, you know, it's funny. He came off a bit scripted. Sort of, some people said he's a really good high school debater, has to prove how smart he is. And his answers were somewhat generic, general, and again, not very compelling. I don't think this was his strongest debate. I don't think he did anything to break himself out of the pack and sort of give people a reason to say, hey, this is a guy who really does have it and we need to go, you know, with him. And Senator Klobuchar has had stronger debates at other times. She talked a lot about herself. She seemed to get stuck in sort of the policies and not the vision. And what people want in a president is both a head of state and a head of government. So a head of government will give us the policies and a head of state will give us the vision. She didn't seem to communicate that. So she was also a bit more unsteady than she had been. So I'm not altogether sure that the candidates, anyone sort of stood out last night, but there may be a reason for this. And here's the reason. There's that old expression in medicine, you know, first do no harm. And I think none of them wanted to do anything that could potentially alienate supporters of other candidates. And here's the reason why. In Iowa, in every precinct, you need to get 15% of the vote to be able to get your votes registered and your delegates at that point. If you don't reach that 15% threshold as a candidate, you no longer are included in the group. So what happens is that all of these people who may support a candidate like Tom Steyer, if he's not going to reach 15%, who's their second choice? And that's who they eventually will caucus with and boost the numbers of that other candidate. So keep this in mind. It's that 15% rule in Iowa, which is critical, and therefore nobody wanted to alienate any of the other candidates because they didn't want to anger their supporters who might ultimately look at them as a second choice if their particular candidate doesn't reach that 15% threshold.
Yep, I see exactly what you're talking about. Although it'll be fair to say that perhaps the three at the bottom, so to speak, might not have done enough to even warrant the 15, right?
Correct. I don't think anybody helped themselves enough to be able to get there. I think someone like Mayor Pete is banking on his ground game right now. He's poured a lot of money into sort of local organizing, and he's hoping that that will get him to the 15%. But again, these polls are fluid. According to one poll that I saw, I think it was the Des Moines Register poll, about 30% of the voters actually support somebody who may not get to that 15%. So this is there are a lot of moving parts here. So yeah. I agree with you. I don't think they did anything to help themselves. They didn't necessarily do anything to harm themselves. It was sort of an uninspiring debate. It wasn't a debate that gave us much more information. You heard a lot of the same arguments sort of hashed over from previous debates. Some might argue that the real winner in this was President Trump, because if he's standing side to side with any of these candidates and they perform the way they did last night, again, the entertainer-in-chief is going to be a much more compelling TV and radio persona than anybody standing on that stage last night.
Well, we could leave it right there, but I have one final question, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
With respect to Senator Cory Booker's exit from the race this week, the debate stage was, well, very plainly white. For a party that has long prided itself for focusing on issues which most concern African-American voters, the optics seemed skewed. Certainly an election doesn't require a racial diversity component, but considering that two of the candidates, Biden and Buttigieg, felt the need to address their support, whether real or perceived, from Dems' largest voting bloc. Is this a problem for Democrats?
Well, it sort of is, but let's also remember that the person who has been polling highest in, among African-American voters, assuming these polls are correct, has been Vice President Biden. So, again, the people, at least in polls, who answer the questions do have agency to support whomever they want, regardless of the color of their skin. And if they say, hey, we like this guy, Joe Biden, he worked closely with the first African-American president, we respect that, we like it, we like that partnership, it means a lot to us, that has a voice as well. So if Cory Booker, let's say, had caught more fire among minority voters, he would have been on that stage. So again, polls are an imperfect way to measure all of this, and I think the Democratic National Committee has to rethink how they figure out who stands on these stages and at what point. And it isn't healthy for a party that is arguably one of the most diverse political parties in the entire world to have only sort of white people standing on stage. No, that's not healthy. But again, assuming the polls are somewhat a reflection of popular sentiment, Joe Biden has kept that support among the African-American community at a pretty high level. So, you know, you can't take the agency away from the people who have been answering those pollsters and giving their opinions on that.
Yeah, and perhaps Biden's pitch of being the most electable is borne out from that very effect that you just alluded to.
Yes, and what he will argue is he has the single most diverse and broadest coalition in the Democratic Party, and that's going to give him the strength to take on Donald Trump. But I'll say this, if Joe Biden gets the nomination, I would almost guarantee that it's going to be either Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor of Georgia in 2018, or Kamala Harris, the senator from California, as his vice presidential candidate.
You are on record, sir. It will be thrilling to see if you're correct.
And notice I put the word almost guarantee, almost. But, you know, yeah, you can hold me to it.
Indeed. CBS News political consultant Leonard Steinhorn, always appreciate your time and insights, sir.
Thanks for having me.